There we go. All right. Hello, everyone. We are calling our UMCS board meeting to order. It is 6:23 on September 23rd. Greg, can you call record attendance, please?
Sure. Christina, are you here?
I am.
Thank you. Davis.
I am here.
And this is Greg. I'm here in person. Hey, Sin looks like she is absent. Jan.
Here.
Lauren.
Here.
And Olivia. I don't see Olivia on the call. And Stacy is not on the call yet, so they are absent. All
All
right,
right.
we have quorum. We're here.
Okay. Do we have a need to reorder any of our agenda items for today? Anyone? Anyone? All right. If there is no need to reorder anything, we can move to board appreciations. Is there any appreciations from the board or community?
I would like to appreciate Olivia, who is one of our other outgoing FAC board members, for all of her work the last 2 years and for just jumping in and, completely engaging and supporting the school and, doing a wonderful job over the last 2 years.
Well, I'll hop in and say I want to also appreciate Olivia for her board service. Just jumping into academic committee, bringing another educator experience to that work and the board's work, and just always being so positive. So really appreciate that. And then also to you, Lauren. It's also you're ending your term time on the board, and just want to appreciate your attention to details, your offering of language and suggestions, and also taking on like a leadership role of the board, being our vice president, facilitating. And you just brought a lot of great stability between the FAC and the board. So just thank you so much as well, for sure.
Thank you.
Yes, adding on to that, thank you, Lauren. Appreciate all the thoughtful questions you brought and really, kind of speaking from your parent perspective and families and making sure those voices were heard in this meeting. And same with Olivia too. Very much appreciated her educator and parent perspective on the academic committee. And then Hasten is leaving too, as well, right? I know she has done much, and I'm sure others will say, but I know, and I've appreciated her, focus on equity and helping the academic committee as well as the overall board, really thinking about how we're serving our students and families of color, and bringing her deep expertise of Oakland and education sector and context to the board and the school.
Yes, I'd like to second that. I also wanted to offer an appreciation to Hasten, who has, been deeply involved since before I joined the school. So, was a very, large presence here when I joined, and just a great role model for how to support the school and be, an inspiring community member and member of our Oakland community, and really, ground the vision and goals of the school in the context of education in Oakland.
I want to thank all of you exiting board members. Thank you, Lauren, so much for being in this group, meeting with me monthly and sometimes more, and Olivia as well. I really appreciate you guys coming on, and like everybody said before, just jumping in and really like doing everything you could to support us and the community. So I really appreciate you. And Hasan, of course, a huge appreciations to Hasan. He's been an amazing mentor and supporter, and I will continue to keep her on speed dial. And she almost always picks up the phone when I call. I don't do it that much, so that's why. But I've had a number of strange and bizarre occasions to call her randomly in the middle of the day when I needed like immediate advice on how to handle something, like, you know, the power being shut off at Pleasant Street, or like, you know, things like that. And she's, I'm going to continue to do that. I appreciate her greatly and all the work that she put in before I got here and while I've been here. I feel lucky to have overlapped.
Yeah, I'll just offer my personal appreciation for, you know, the exiting FAC board members and just for coming on and being an awesome part of this board. So I appreciate that. And thank you to Hasan for corralling me and getting me on this board, amongst the many other things that Hasan has had an impact on my life. Obviously, her, you know, ability to convince me to get involved in the school, in which I would have never have imagined being involved in a board for a school. So thank you to Hasan for everything.
Yeah, I want to also, so I was just on a call with Hasan on a different Zoom call where I was like, can you please leave this Zoom call and come to your last board meeting just for a few minutes so that, you know, you could hear some of these appreciations live. I did tell her that, of course, there'll be an audio recording. But I mean, Hasan, for me, you know, she's the last founder on the board. She's been on this board since before the school existed. She's probably raised more money than anybody else for this school. She's probably found more board members than anyone else for this school. She's supported all of our school leaders, tons of teachers. She's like tutored in our classrooms. So just, it's been a lot. So it's just a tremendous amount of service. And here we are 10 years in, and, we wouldn't have gotten here without her. So just deep appreciation for all that she's done and continues to do for so many kids in Oakland. It's really amazing what she keeps giving. So yeah, big appreciation.
Any other appreciations from board members or community members?
I want to jump on the appreciations for the outgoing FAC reps, because they really stepped in and helped resuscitate the FAC when we were kind of struggling. And I appreciate their stability and how easy it was to collaborate with them this past year. And I am grateful to you guys.
Anybody else?
I want to appreciate the outgoing board members. It's been so wonderful to have Lauren, all your calm energy and thoughtful, organized energy and presence, and, you know, getting your notes and being able to collaborate on thinking about how we can work on FAC projects and communicate. And that's just been really wonderful, having your voice in the FAC and on the board, and same with Olivia, although she hasn't been able to be part, I haven't gotten to talk to her as much in the last little bit of time. So yes, thank you all so much. And I'll repeat that I wanted to thank the admin for the back to school night and for bringing all that together and the work that went into all those presentations. So, and of course to Hasan for the just sort of immeasurable amount of work that she's done over these many long years. Thank you.
Anybody else?
I would also like to appreciate all the classroom teachers. I know that I had a great experience at Back to School Night and really learned so much more than I have learned from my children about what is going on in the classroom and and what the intentions are and what the systems are and what the schedule is and all of the works that they're doing. It was really amazing. And I appreciate all of the time, after their normal work hours, whatever those may be, that the staff put in to being there and talking to the parents.
I'll echo that one for sure.
Any other appreciations?
No more appreciations for me right now, but just like, hey, Sin, if you're listening to this recording, we wish we could have been together with you in person and really, you know, thrown you the party you deserve. But thanks again for all the years.
Awesome. All right. With that, we'll move on to board member comments. Do any board members have any comments on items that are not on the agenda? If not, do any community members have any comments on items not on the agenda? Yes, Sarah?
Hi, sorry, I don't know if you do a raised hand, say your dad, you know. I no presentation, just wanted to thank Greg for inviting me, Hasten for pushing me to come join tonight and see a little bit about what board service is all about. So I'm excited to learn more, just being a fly on the wall. So thanks for having me.
Awesome, thank you, Sarah. Anybody else? If not, I will hand it over to Krishna for the head of school report.
I found my mute button, sorry. Hi, everybody. I should be good at Zoom, but I've let myself get out of practice. You should all come back in person and then we can just project. It'll be super exciting. welcome, it's September already. Time is flying so fast and so slow at the same time. You know me and all my quips about time and usually my Friday messages. Apparently I'm bringing them to board meetings now. So a little bit about things that are upcoming. There's no school tomorrow. We have a professional development day, which we'll share a little bit more about later. We are starting our first major fundraiser of the year, which I'm gonna make a wild guess that FAC will talk a little bit more about later maybe, but just a big plug for our readathon, which begins Monday, and that kids are already signing up for and collecting pledges. And though it is one of our larger fundraisers of the year, it's also really a push for supporting our students in just a joy of reading. And we are hoping that all kids will participate, whether or not they participate in the fundraising aspect, that they'll participate in avid reading and tracking their reading and getting excited about what they're reading. We also are excited to have some of our parent ed nights calendared, and our first one is coming up in October before our next meeting, which will be with Dr. Rogers Ard talking a bit about critical race theory. What is it? Why is everybody talking about it? And a nice overview for parents about critical race theory. And then we're also going to be doing our first round of NWEA testing beginning next week. So let's see. I'm having slide issues. Sorry. I'm going to turn it over to Daniel, and he can talk a little bit about instruction.
Good evening. So yesterday we had our back to school night. It was nice to see so many people attend. We had a full group session with us where we talked a little bit about some of the new systems that we've been implementing this year. And then the then we broke out into classrooms for two sessions with the classrooms, just so families that have students in multiple classrooms could get to multiple sessions. I got to jump in on all of those classrooms, and it was nice to see classes being able to show families what things look like in the classroom a little bit this year, because people haven't been able to come on campus and in classrooms during the school day. The recording for the whole school presentation is linked to this slide as well as the slides, and that'll be sent out to families as well. And the classroom recordings will go out to the classroom families. So a lot of times we get questions about what is this trickle-in that happens at 8 to 8:15, right? Because class doesn't officially start till 8:15, but we open the doors to the class at 8. And really, that's a really important time for the classrooms. And it's nice that it's not everyone outside and then coming in all at once, because it allows for students to really start their days at a different pace. And it really allows for small groups to be coming in as they arrive at school. And that allows the teachers to also give support students who need help getting their learning journal started, or who want to give a little bit of feedback on the work that they turned in the previous day. So it's a real nice organic 15 minutes for students and teachers to kind of check in and work together before class officially starts at 8:15. And then so we have a time-lapse video of what that looks like in the classroom. This is a lower elementary classroom, and let's see it happening. Right, so you see students come in at different paces, teachers checking in with students. I was just going real fast. Students getting their learning journal started, writing down the date, some feedback given from the work. You can't see it so quickly, but it eventually ends with everyone gathering together for the morning meeting. Part of this is a Zoom thing. On your computer, it doesn't look quite as choppy. So that's what that morning trickling looks like. And it's really nice to see all the classrooms get comfortable with that process of students kind of trickling in, getting their learning journal started and ready to start the day right at 8:15. So we've been talking a lot about the systems that we've been putting in place, and that's been one of our focuses in coaching meetings with teachers. So I'm meeting with teachers weekly, and we're talking about some of those systems that we talked about at back to school night last night. And real quick today, just to share with you all, well, one of the big ones is around the turnover of work or the rhythm of work in the classroom. And so when you get a lesson in a Montessori classroom, it's rarely full class, right? So in primary, it's usually one-to-one. In elementary, it's smaller groups, maybe 5 or 6 students, and maybe as large as 8 to 10 on occasion. And so everyone's working on different things at one time. So it's important to be able to see what work everyone's working on, especially for the teacher, the students, and the support teacher in the classroom, to be able to guide people to the right work. So when you get a lesson, there's always expected follow-up work that happens. And so what we're moving towards in our coaching meetings is making sure that all those lessons are going up somewhere where students can see it with the names of the students. So students know, teachers know, like, what are the lessons that I have to do my follow-up work for? They then do that work. They turn it into, there's like a 3-tiered bin in every class where the turn in, a return, and a no names pile. But that work gets checked frequently, usually by the next day. And then during that trickle-in time, teachers are often giving feedback on work, saying like what kind of adjustments might need to be made. A final draft gets turned in. And then at that point, names start to get crossed off of the lists by the lesson names that you can see on the board here. And then so then towards the end of the week, teachers are able to conference with those students and really lay out the work that they've done that week, right? So everything that's been fully completed. And then they can kind of lay it out, set some goals for the following week, talk about work productivity, or like maybe like, oh, like you're really focusing on one area of the classroom this week. Let's make sure that we're getting lessons and focusing on other areas next week. And then some of those pieces might stay in the classroom in a portfolio that's being built up for the year, but also the rest of the work, making sure that that goes home regularly, because I know families are always asking like, what's happening in that Montessori classroom? We don't know what's going on. So by making sure that work goes home regularly, families are able to kind of not only see what their students are working on, but also build in another level of accountability around if that work is happening, right? So work doesn't, the lessons don't always call for follow-up work that's going to be on paper, right? Because a lot of it is manipulating materials. So there's definitely some conversations to have there, and we'll start putting out, and teachers will start putting out kind of ideas around how to have conversations around that work that does come home. Like what questions will generate more useful answers from your students around like what lessons they're actually getting and what follow-up work they're supposed to be doing. But it also gives families an idea of like when they might be hearing from teachers around that work at school. Sorry, that was a lot. So tomorrow we have a PD day, no students, but teachers will be here. We'll be doing a little bit of community building. We'll talk about the readathon and do some housekeeping. And we're gonna check in. Last month we talked about the Nautilus system that we're putting in place. So we're gonna do a little bit of calibrating around that and reviewing our initial data that we do have around that. And we'll start talking about NWA administration and training for our new staff. The Dibbles is being finished off by classrooms right now. And so their teachers are inputting their data into our data system. And then so we'll be able to also start looking at that and planning and collaborating around next steps there.
Thank you, Daniel. So our usual enrollments, I just have, we'll talk more about this in finance committee, but just as I mentioned last month, our enrollment's definitely much lower than we budgeted for at the end of the last year. And we will have some opportunity to talk about that more in finance and reasons why we're gonna keep it where it's at. Particularly our main enrollment changes are in our primary classrooms, our TKK enrollment. It's very low at this point, which I think is something that schools are experiencing across Oakland, but it's also a good place for us to support our kids by increased distancing. So the fact that we have smaller numbers in those rooms than typical really is an additional safety measure for our kids. We have quite a few four-year-olds who are a long way from vaccination, even if they do approve vaccination for our five and ups. You guys know we enrolled some additional four-year-olds this year, and we have kids that won't be vaccinated until much closer to the end of the academic year. And so we're investing in those classrooms by maintaining them even with some smaller numbers. And we'll talk more about what that looks like in finance committee, but a little heads up on that. Some quick staffing updates. We're fully staffed, which is super wonderful. We have 100% of our positions filled. We hired a new member of our operations team who's in their second week this week, and it's going wonderfully. We're really excited to just have a full complement. And I think as all schools are experiencing right now, staff absences are up. They're very high at times, and we are operating understaffed 100% of the time. There are no subs available, and so we want to publicly talk about this and ask community to be supportive and understanding of the fact that many of us are behind on our regular jobs because we're supporting classrooms directly. And Daniel and I have both been subbing regularly in classrooms and maybe a little bit less responsive on our emails than people would like us to be and like than we normally are. And so far it's been fine, and we're all stepping up to support each other in those moments. But we had several days last week with upwards of 8 or 9 student-facing staff members out at the same time. So it can be a challenge. And thanks everybody for your understanding in those moments. That's it for us for now. We have some other things that we left off because they're agendized later. But if there's any questions for us, now's a great time.
I have a question. I don't know if I should look at my camera though, or you at Daniel, but for MAP, can you just real quick just share like which assessments we're doing at which grade levels?
Yeah, we test first through eighth grade students in math and reading. So we've eliminated the language assessment for a lot of discussions last year in our academic committee. We actually didn't administer that. I think we administered it at least once, but we had eliminated it by our last administration and possibly by the winter one.
I have a question as well. Can you speak a little more to the staff absences and whether those are primarily COVID related, not in the sense necessarily of cases, but in the sense of conservative, caution and other sort of associated factors, or are there other factors we're aware of, and do we have any sense of what the pattern might be going forward?
Well, I think something that everybody's experiencing, including parents, is that you can't have any symptoms and come to school. And even if your symptoms are pretty mild, the guidance is to get tested. So testing results take a day or two. So even if you're feeling better, we have primarily, it's just, if you have symptoms, you can't come to work, right? It's not, there's just not any wiggle room on that. And so that's what we're seeing. And we have a hard job too. So there's lots of little, even with masks, I think there's lots of little illnesses. We've all been apart for a long time. So any of those small things, become something you have to miss work for, and then you have to wait for your test results before you can come back. So it's been, obviously there's individual things here and there that are different, but it's definitely all symptom-based. And the concern I'd say long-term is that the more that folks are out or have to be out for various reasons, the harder it is for everybody who's here, and the more worn down we are, and the more likely the rest of us are going to be out at some point in the future. And that's definitely a concern that we have for ourselves and for others. And so we're talking about that with our staff as well, and just thinking about how can we be sure that we're creatively setting ourselves up for better success and supporting each other. Because it's going to be ongoing, and there's no subs, and there's no safe way to have subs anyways, to be honest. So we're lucky to have two adults in every room, which makes it better. We're better off than many schools in the same situation. So we're getting by, but it's definitely going to be, it's going to be ongoing.
Can I quickly add, and that being said, the work that's happening in the classrooms has been pretty really impressive in terms, and with these systems in place, the amount of lessons that are happening in the classroom is pretty incredible. We have teachers commenting that they're getting more lessons done this year than they ever have, right? 10, 11, 12 lessons in a day, crazy numbers. So we're really happy with the work that teachers are putting in, and they're working really, really hard in the classrooms.
I have a question about enrollment. Do you feel that it's kind of stabilized now, or are there kind of continually changes happening? Are students disenrolling?
I'll just say we're definitely going to look at some numbers in finance in just a minute. Can we just hang for a sec?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Any other questions for Krishna or Daniel?
From the public too. Any public comment?
I don't have a question, but I want to say I appreciate the transparency about the follow-up to lessons. I feel like that's kind of been a challenge for teachers and parents, for teachers to convey to parents and for parents to understand. So I appreciate that it's as structured as it is now, because I feel like that's kind of been a gap for our students. So thank you.
Any other questions from board members or the community? We'll go to Greg for discussion of COVID-19 procedures and policies.
Yeah, I just wanted to create a little space just to go over and just remind everyone of like where we're at, and then also just like how we can all keep getting more input and getting more feedback and keep moving forward and refining things. So, you know, on our website, we've got our COVID-19 page, and on that page, we've got our safety guides. So I think everyone's aware, but just to real quick, you know, everyone's wearing masks, obviously, indoors and out, students and teachers. Teachers have to be vaccinated or test. Is it once a week or twice a week if they're not vaccinated?
Once a week.
Once a week. We have all the kids eating lunch outside. Lots of kids are also doing like work and lessons outside. Every classroom's got a like a wedding tent style with tables outside. We are also starting, the school's starting to collect, the freezer just came on. We asked families of older students to volunteer to share their students' vaccination status, which included an opportunity for them to say, I declined to state. So we're just trying to collect that information about our oldest students who are already eligible, just to understand where we're at with that. And then there's also indoor air filters in every classroom as well. And there's masks available for kids who need them. And there's also updated snack procedures and stuff like that around eating. And that snack also happens outside. So that's a few of the highlights. When there is a test that comes back positive or symptoms, there's been some testing that's been able to happen right on campus. When my child was in a classroom that had someone in it that had a positive case. And so we all got like parent square notifications through them, which is the messaging platform, asking for our permission to like test our kid. And we chose to let our child be tested here at school. So like just those procedures are there. Now, that being said, my understanding is the actual test supply has been really impacted here and across the Bay Area for sure. We just found another testing supply resource just today that I think we're going to follow up on and try and keep increasing our access to on-site testing. And obviously staff and parents can go other places to get tests, but it's nice if it's convenient and right here. And then every Friday, there's this part of the Friday messages to staff and families. It's gotten tweaked every Friday. The exact like structure of the COVID dashboard reporting is going out, but everyone's being notified of, of positive cases that week and the number of classrooms impacted. So far that's meant the number of classrooms on what the state calls modified quarantine, where you can still come to school, but you have to get tested, and the school, when your classroom's on modified quarantine here at Irma Montessori, you're not doing PE with other classrooms, you're not doing lunch near anyone else's classrooms, you're not doing recess near anyone else's classrooms, right? Those are just a few of the things that have all had to be put into place to get us to where we're at right now. And then I think in this Friday's message, when it comes to reporting the dashboard numbers, we just put in there that if anyone has feedback on the communications moving forward about how the dashboard looks or what else could be included, just to send that my way so I can capture all the data. And then I can just share kind of on a weekly basis, like the feedback back to the admin team that they can then, you know, either factor in or not, you know, it'll be their call, but I can just kind of synthesize the feedback for them moving forward. So I just wanted to kind of create that space just to like review all of that. And then if people have questions right now, we can take questions, or if people have some ideas, we can do that right now too, or you can email me offline. But I just wanted to, you know, we've been at this for a few weeks now, so just wanted to kind of see where we're at. We definitely have had cases. I think we're at, I don't know what the dashboard's going to say tomorrow. But I think the last one, was like 3 cases so far as of last week or something like that I was aware of.
There will be new info on this week's and some new formatting, including a two-tier of like classes impacted via modified quarantine and classes in full quarantine, which means distance learning.
Oh, and the other, I guess I forgot to mention this. When your classroom's impacted as a family member, you get a notification right away. You don't wait till the end of the week. And so that is also a part of the process.
Yeah, and those notifications go out via Parent Square, text message, and phone call potentially at times. We've done that as well.
I have a couple questions and I guess ideas or wonderings. And one is at the last meeting, we had talked about the possibility of having a communication system where we have a dashboard that's available on the website that's updated more often, and the separate weekly communication to try to address both the need to not be communicating about this to everybody every day, but still have more up-to-date data available for people who may have, you know, circumstances that I get where they, you know, I guess are more, have higher risk. And I think we had talked about looking into what other districts or what Oakland is doing and what other districts are doing. So I guess I was wondering if there's any further follow-up on that or thoughts.
I don't think there's anything up on the website now, but Lauren, I could mock something up with you and we could put it on the COVID-19 site. You know, I don't know how on the getting it up to date, like on the daily, I can't speak to that. I mean, I could be available. I would need the information, but with everything that's going on around like being in classrooms and stuff, it's just one more kind of thing to do. But I can certainly play with you around like what you think, what you've got in your, what you're imagining for what might go up on the website. And I think like for OUSD, they do have a website up for sure. And I think they're updating it every week.
Yeah, they update it weekly, one time a
okay.
week.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I think we're very open to like the locations we put it. I have to say, from a capacity standpoint, in reality, updating more than once a week is not something that we have capacity to do at this time. And it's all we can do to make sure we're notifying in real time people that are impacted and continue to support learning and safety in the classrooms that are down staff. And so I definitely cannot commit to more than once weekly at this point. And, but very happy to think about different ways to share that data and like continue to modify and adjust the way that we put that out on Fridays or a different day. And if, but just trying to be honest and transparent in like our team capacity, we're operating understaffed every day and are unable to read our emails most of the time. So adding that is going to be a challenge.
Okay. If the are there concerns other than sort of capacity around updating more frequently? Just in the sense that if we're sending out communications to impacted families, can we, you know, like always CC Greg, I'm volunteering you, or, you know, something where someone else could help take some of that load.
Sure. That's a great idea. We can try and figure it out. I don't think Chris is ready to like make a promise tonight or a pledge to get it done, but we can certainly play with that and see how it goes.
Okay. And the other question the other thought I had is that having, now we've been at this, you know, this week six, I guess, and having had, you know, a child in a class that was in modified quarantine and sort of looking at it from having been a parent, it's the guidance around testing timing is challenging I think, to decipher in terms of, like the language from the CDC, I think is twice in 10 days, but there's a big difference in the meaningfulness of those results depending on when in those 10 days the testing is offered. And I'm wondering if, recognizing that testing availability is impacted, if we could think from an equity perspective whether there might be more we could do to, I'm thinking along the lines of offering, first is what the decision was around offering testing on day one versus day five of the quarantine, and then whether we might be able to say, if parents who have the ability to get their child tested elsewhere can opt out so that a test is available for a child, to be tested again, it might be harder for them to get tested offsite. Whether there might be sort of more we can do to support parents deciphering.
I think that the schools like just following the steps that the county lays out. That's my understanding around like when they're testing and stuff like that. And I wonder, I haven't been on the calls with the county. I know they happen pretty regularly. I wonder if we had a county rep on right now, if they would say, yeah, that kind of makes sense. But from the public health point of view, I think if you've got 15 kids who will take a test right there, you test them. And you just try and get a sense as quickly as possible of like, is there something bigger going on? That's just a hunch, but I don't know for sure. I don't know, Chris, do you have more to share about kind of where the testing protocol comes from?
Well, first I'll say it's just really new, right? Like we haven't had a lot of opportunity to do it. We were unable to test any students in our first modified quarantine with a classroom. It was not a possibility. We didn't have tests. We didn't have an ability to sign kids up. And so it's still very new. The guidance says to test them right away and then again in 5 days. So it's a two-time test, and we haven't had opportunity to do the second test due to other needs to test a different class on the first, on a day one, and not having test kits. So like in the class that you're experiencing, I did not have test kits for a second. And since we'd had no additional positives, the risk is lower there than in the new exposure room. And then in that classroom, we had many positive tests come back and we shut the room. And so we're not going to test that class a second time because we're not going to invite them back to school until they've cleared their quarantine. And so it's just every case is case by case. And so we're going to need people to trust that we're following it to the best of our ability through the guidance that we're getting directly from the county. They're not that easy to get a hold of, but I now have phone numbers. And I've been able to talk to like real humans that work there finally. So I've saved those phone numbers for future need if necessary.
Other kind of, like I said, so moving forward, you can shoot me notes if you have more suggestions or comments on the comms or the procedures themselves, and I'll do my best to, like I said, synthesize it so it's not just kind of getting lost in a parent square message or in the inboxes. But that was that one. Any other public comment on that? All right.
That we will move to Finance Committee. Stacy.
Hey everyone. One second. All right, let me share screen. All right, so we'll share where we are for this fiscal year to date. There's kind of where we are in cash flow. So since we talked last month with a lot of what we just talked about, and also with changes in enrollment, we are projecting a 179 budget deficit for the end of the year, given where we are with enrollment and also anticipations with other ADA challenges. So wanted to name that, but I think just this is just a hard year for everybody. A lot is going on with our kids, teachers, everything, and community that we're serving. So this is happening everywhere. So not completely surprised by what we're seeing. And the team's doing an amazing job continuing to work on supporting students, supporting families, and managing attendance. We did have a few adjustments in revenue in terms of a bit more federal revenue and other savings and service and operations. So a few things there. Just wanted to name the big shift of the forecast that will likely stay. And a lot of that's because of how we're structuring and wanting to expand TK next year, that we want to just keep the space and the teacher capacity for that opportunity next year. So we don't want to do any adjustments, whether that means closing classrooms or merging classrooms at this point in time. That wouldn't make sense for our kids and our community. So we want to, the finance committee does recommend continuing forward with the current plan as a way to create sustainability for the school moving forward. So with that, we did move some ESSER fundings from future years into this year to balance out some of the revenue side, but ultimately this would decrease fund balance to 28%. But again, it's an investment in the future that we want for Urban Montessori. So finance committee does recommend that this is the right move to make. And it'll be a 1-year hit with then future ability to enroll more at the TK level and grow the kids to have a more stable funding stream related to ADA. In terms of cash balance, we're in a good place here where we have the above 3 months expense for most of the year. So we are, so we are projecting to be in good shape. And just again, usually our cash situation will go down in the June, July timeframe, and then the new influx of funding will come in the summer and rebalance it out. So a lot of this is just timing of federal and state funding than anything really on our end. So we're looking good, which is exciting. Some years we have kind of a dip that we need to worry about, but this is a great year. So thanks team for managing on the cash side. And also some of the ESSER funding is helpful to make sure that we have that support. So while we're continuing forward with this, I know that this year will likely take hit financially so that we can invest in the future that we want for the school. We as a finance committee are partnering with Krishna and team to continue to figure out like what can we do where possible with enrollment, ADA, attendance, continue watching for other state relief possibilities so we can continue supporting, if possible, some increases on the revenue side with students and attendance and enrollment. And we already moved some ESSER funds to this year, but we'll continue evaluating throughout the year if there's more opportunities to move more ESSER funding. And watch again for other state relief funding and continue with our fundraising efforts and looking out for any additional grant opportunities available. And then expense-wise, we were pretty clear when we were budgeting that it was going to be pretty close. So there's not a ton of potential savings there, but we always do have a kind of a director's buffer line item for attendance. In case we're below the expectation that we have for in the budget. So we do have some buffer in the budget that we'll kind of keep an eye out for and see if there's additional savings. So all to say, we know where we are, like where we're likely going to end the year. And of course, we're going to keep looking at both additional revenue opportunities and savings on the expense side. So we can try to narrow that to the extent that is realistic and reasonable. All right, Davis, Greg, or Krishna, anything else to add that I might have missed?
Well, we also talked about the contract that's on the consent agenda for later tonight and recommended it that it get approved. It's about the fencing. And then on the budget stuff, just, yeah, I mean, if you go, Stacey, if you could go back up to the slide that shows, yeah. So that deficit is almost entirely currently, I think of it as an investment in the primary level. Where I think in any other year, I think starting in a few months when we open up enrollment again for next year, like it's going to be well worth that investment for what it's worth. Well, I was going to share this. This is an OUSD update, so that comes later in the agenda, but OUSD is going through teacher consolidations right now. It is not something that you want to go through in a school community in the middle of a pandemic if you can avoid it. And so I think that's, we got one-time money to keep kids safe. And I think this is an investment in the right way. And in terms of the long-term enrollment, like all the other grades are like in really good shape in a lot of ways. The upper grades and the middle school is bigger than it's ever been. And we've got a model. I've been working on it with EdTech for like years down the road that really has the opportunity to be a reasonable enrollment goal and like not rely on one-time funding or institutional fundraising or anything like that. So the future, I think, is looking pretty good on this stuff. And the universal TK enrollment is also going to be really great for a school like ours.
Are there any questions? And Jan, did that answer your questions that you had previously?
No, I don't think so. Can you, yeah, are we expecting enrollment to go down more? Has it, yeah, I guess my question is like,
yeah,
is this kind of from the beginning of the year, or are we seeing students disenroll, you know, now?
I don't think we're seeing students disenroll that so every parent now can see the school directory on Parent Square, and the number has been like, as soon as it got published, it was like 350, now it's 352. I've gotten numbers from Mr. Buck like every week or so. It doesn't look to me like there's any, so this is just kids not coming at the beginning, never showing up for primary, mostly in primary. Yeah, like the class size in upper elementary is like 28, 29. In lower elementary, it might be about 30. And there's 40 kids in the middle school. Middle school is bigger than it's ever been. It's a little under 40, just under 40. Mr. Buck, I know, is letting, you know, we're looking at like on the model, you know, do we need another second grader? No, we know we don't need another second grader. could we take a fifth grader? You know, and he's like letting, you know, and he's like enrolling one or offering one spot and then seeing if they take it and then, you know, really carefully managing it. So it doesn't like, so we don't get any new, you know, bubbles of oversized classrooms. Even last school year, we had classes in distance learning that were like pretty large, like much larger than we had wanted. And as far as I'm aware of, like all those issues of class size are gone. So I think there's been a lot of progress made in like cleaning up those systems. And it's not about students like leaving or like some fall trouble or anything like that I'm aware of.
Right. I think there's been there were a bunch of students that started in independent study and ran out of independent study days and then chose to make other decisions. So we could see those ones coming, right? And we got a little bit of ADA funding for the 14 days or whatever that they were allowed to do independent study. So there's still a few of those. And as Greg said, the class sizes are fairly nice overall. But there are some grade level bubbles, so we have to be really careful about who we offer to. So some of the areas we have a longer wait list are actually the spaces where we can't take a kid, even if we have space in a classroom, because the bubble impacts us for forever. So second grade, great example. First graders, I'd love to take some first graders. We have some space there. We might have a little third grade. I don't know. We got a new third grader today who had their first day. So we're slowly accepting more students, and we're still getting people reaching out. It's been a weird enrollment year in that way, where I think we're still getting phone calls and we're getting folks that are who made another choice, who are looking for something different. So we're actually getting more like late applications than I think is normal, but it's pretty stable. It's not going to go down a lot from where we're at. There'll be some of that normal attrition that happens from people moving away and things like that. But none of it's based on unhappiness at the school. It was just those initial independent studies or folks making other decisions in those first few weeks and looking for distance learning mostly for those folks.
Thank you. And I'm sorry if I missed it, but what has ADA been the past month? Is it lower than past years? I know that's common hearing that from other schools. And
I don't think we have clean data yet, because the independent study thing is such a mess. And so many people were on independent study in the first 2 weeks, but we're close to having cleaner data. Do you have some?
I all I know is that what as of the end of August, so because the data is usually the best you can have is from the month prior, that we're still just forecasting. We're now forecasting 352 enrolled students and an ADA of 330, which is 94%. So that's what I'm aware of in terms of that. Yeah.
And in terms of the hard data, we many of the people who are in independent study haven't signed a contract yet, so we can't adjust their attendance record until they sign the contract, but they have 30 days to sign the contract. So everything's a little bit more skewed than it usually would be for things like that. And there were enough of them that it makes the data hard to look at. So we're hoping that like our September data will be cleaner than our August data was and will give us a better idea as we have fewer independent studies. Because those are proving to be a lot of work.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Finance Committee?
Or public comment?
Yep, or public comment. If not, we will move to Academic Oversight Committee. So I will hand that over to Jan.
Yeah, great. We had a good meeting in September with Lauren and myself and Daniel. There went into kind of more detail, similar to the update tonight, hearing about the systems and that are in place in the coaching and assessment. That is upcoming. We potentially will be looking at MWA map data in October, but it's kind of have to see what the timing. I think our meeting is right around when the window ends. So we're not sure yet if we're going to be able to dig into that in the October meeting. But we'll, I think, look at Dibble's data then. And we spent time talking about the goals and first some of discussion around some like measures, really measures of success and getting a bit more kind of concrete and how as a school we want to measure those. So had good discussion and want to come back to that in October and kind of shared some ideas and thoughts around how best to really measure and be able to, you know, track progress and plan as a committee to, you know, be reviewing those each month based on what is relevant and what data points are available. And that was about all. We are, Lauren and Hasten are part of that committee. So I think kind of coming up next in executive, we need at least one other member so that we can meet in October. Do hope that the future FAC board members, that you know, at least one of them would be part of it. But yes, we are looking for more members. Seems like Greg, maybe you'll join us.
We'll figure it out in a moment.
Any questions for Jan and Academic Oversight Committee?
And just in terms of the testing too, planning on SBAC testing in the spring.
Definitely. Yeah, I was gonna say, Jan, have you and or the committee, did you track the state's news about the growth model, the state growth model?
We hadn't talked about that in the committee, but yes. I think there had been a webinar maybe just the day before or after something, the committee. So the state now has come up with a growth model, a student growth model for SBAC, which is really great. California was one, I think, of two states that didn't have a student level growth model. So they've worked on developing it. It takes 3 years of SVAC data. So the state kind of looked at historical SVAC data, and I believe has released it. So I think Krishna and Daniel, you should be able to access through TOMS a report for from earlier data. So the data are not actionable now, but in order to kind of get a sense of what they are. And then it will not be released again until the 23-24, after 23-24 testing, because it needs the model needs 3 years of data. So the thought is that it will be, 21-22 testing, 22-23 school year, and then 23-24. And at that point, then there would be new growth data released. And I think nothing concrete yet in terms of like the California dashboard changing, but I would imagine that those changes would come at some point after, the 23-24 school year, when there are those data and that the growth model being incorporated into the California dashboard. But
That's what I heard too. They're gonna re-release it in a few years, and then maybe either after that or separately make the decision whether or not to incorporate it into the accountability system or not. Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, I'm glad. Thank you for tracking that. Oh, that's awesome.
Any other questions or public comment for Economic Committee?
I have a question. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. I'm wondering if the Academic Oversight Committee has a role in sort of looking at or tracking some of the data for SPED students at the school. Or I'm just wondering in part because the model changed for our school and we no longer have a director of SPED, and so there's been that shifting around of who's doing what and who's tracking what. And I just, I realize I've heard it mentioned at different times over the years, but at this point in time, I'm wondering if the Academic Oversight Committee has, what role they have in relation to sort of looking at growth for SPED students.
I would think that definitely can fit under our purview. I think in terms of disaggregating data, we have focused more on like race and ethnicity and EL students in the past. But happy, I think that's a good kind of call out, and we can work to be sure that we are doing that. I think in terms of analysis, Daniel, are you working with Buck and being sure that we always get those breakdowns?
We also have had LCAP metrics typically on that, which we do report on. And I just because we don't have a specific person whose only job is director of SPED, like I go to 100% of the IEP meetings. I am in SACE daily, and I do that work for SPED and work with our SPED teachers on that. And so we are reporting that data in our LCAP, as there's always been specific metrics around it. So last year the metric was percent of goals met, because it's different stuff to measure. So it lines up really nicely under academic, but it doesn't always. So we were specifically, one thing we've done historically is tracking how many of the total goals are met each year, like percentage of goals met, which is a good way for us to see whether we're supporting students' specific identified needs in whatever their individual IEP plan, has identified as their area.
Right. Yeah, the part of the reason why I was making the comment or asking the question is just because I feel like in many ways there are lots of students who are having more success at Urban than they've had in other schools, or their families have a strong indication that this is the best model for them at this time. And I just know sometimes translating or how that fits in with the academic oversight committee as well. But yeah.
And we also survey the SPED families, get a separate survey in the panorama surveys that go out twice a year. So, you know, maybe that's something FAC can support us in like helping our families make sure they fill them out. Because one problem is when you get sent three surveys instead of one, we don't always get them all filled out, which is totally understandable. We actually survey that separately, which could be a really helpful way as we go for renewal again in a couple of years, right?
Right.
To have our families who can share that, because it's true, a lot of SPED families really appreciate our program because we're truly inclusive in a way that not all schools are.
Thank you.
Any other questions or public comment for academic oversight? All right. If not, I will pass it over to Lauren for the fact report.
Thank you. I am going to share my screen. Okay. Are you looking at my PowerPoint? okay, so elections. We are in the middle of our election and nomination and endorsement process. We have the two-week nomination period is happening right now. And during that nomination period, people can nominate themselves or others for either the FAC board positions or the leadership positions within the FAC or for the FAC representative roles. And following that, we have an endorsement and election period during which we share the statements that we've collected through the nominations with the community. And people have the opportunity to endorse people for different roles. And it's more often than not, you know, a process of letting the community learn a little bit about the people who are taking on these roles. And, but also if there is more than one person interested in a role, it is used for election purposes as well. At the moment, we have had a lot of interest in the FAC working group, so quite a few new members who are interested in working on specific topics, but we have not had anyone step up who has expressed interest in serving on the board. So we are doing ongoing communication around encouraging people to reach out to myself or to Greg to learn more about what being on the board involves and to attend these meetings. But we would certainly appreciate those of you who have contact with families continuing to think about who might be interested in this and to talk about it. And we will continue to do so and hope to get those positions filled. The focus groups that are in the forefront this year are the community building and fundraising, academic oversight, which have been two of the ongoing primary working groups for several years. And then we have had people step up who are particularly interested in campus beautification and improvement, disaster preparedness, attendance, and traffic. And we've had a number of people join these groups on Parent Square. We've got about 1 to 7 people in each of these working groups, which is nice to see. Fundraising, as Krishna mentioned, we have the readathon starting. I'm thinking I might have, maybe Kara can confirm if these dates. I dates are correct. We have fundraising pages live, and starting Monday, the reading begins, and that will be ongoing through October 12th. And supporting that, the FAC is holding book swaps at pickup the Tuesdays and Thursdays throughout that 2-week period. So there'll be 4 swaps at pickup and 1 on Saturday, where people can come and drop off and pick up books. Future work. The campus work group has started communicating with staff to identify what their top priorities are and have a work day coming up on the 16th. And we also have 4 upcoming workshops with Dr. Rogers Ard scheduled. I think one focus with these is making sure that we continue to do a good job communicating these and letting everyone in the community know that they are welcome to join these workshops and participate. And that is everything from the FAC. Are there any questions or comments?
Lauren, I don't get it. Like, board service is so much fun.
I know.
I'm shocked that, you know, your phone isn't just like off the hook all the time with people just clamoring to hang out with us once a month at night, you know, super late.
But
thank you all for doing that. People will emerge, even if it takes a moment, maybe through those working groups and other things. Like, people will emerge, or maybe they're on this call right now and they just don't realize it, so we'll see. And then also thank you. I think it's so rad that these workshops are already calendared, they're on the school calendar, they're ready to go, like, all the way through April. Like, that's just awesome, so thank you for that work as well.
Thank you. If there are no other board questions, are there any public questions, including comment from our FAC president, who I think is still with us?
I'm still with you. thank you, Lauren. I think that was everything. And your dates for the readathon are correct. We're still figuring out. I've opened up the weekend book swap thing to volunteers to run it because I am out of town. So hopefully that will happen, but we're unclear at the moment.
Okay. I think I saw at least one person signed up. Okay. Then I will turn it over.
All right. Just confirming there's no other questions for FAC or public comment. All right. If not, then we will move on to Executive and Governance Committee. Greg, are you taking that?
Sure.
Okay.
Are you going to take a minute for me?
I will take a minute.
All right, cool. Let me get out of that. I just pulled up the minutes from the Executive Committee so I could remember what we did. So we talked about, looks like 3 main things. So the first thing is, we had a very, like I said before, we had a brief discussion at the Executive Committee, technically about like a potential student facing vaccine mandate. And we didn't take any actions or anything other than to suggest that one way to inform that sort of decision would be to, one, track what's going on in other parts of the state, which we're doing, like I mentioned with LUSD, and also just to start collecting informally, you know, we're not asking for verification or anything or cards or anything from folks for related to the students who are 12 and up. So that I know that data is being collected right now. Hopefully it has a high response rate. It's only our sixth, seventh, and eighth graders. So it can only be like, I don't know, 90 kids, 80 kids total. And they're not all the sixth graders are 12. So just to inform, like, how close are we already in terms of vaccination? So that was one thing we discussed. We also discussed the head of school evaluation process for this year. Specifically, we found two times on the calendar when the board from the committee could be available to do staff listening sessions. So one's coming up next week in September. We were like, let's do kind of like, hey, was back to school listening session, start of school, how are things going? First time back on campus, you know, all that sort of stuff all together. So doing a listening session earlier than we normally do. And people can, it's always optional for staff, but we got feedback a few years ago to try and place it at a time and place like during their workday. And so the administration has found a time during staff workday when they could opt in to come and share whatever they need to share. So we're doing that in September and also in March. We have the calendar, it's the fifth Wednesdays months. And the note that goes out to staff, just so everybody knows, it says like, you don't have to wait for these listening sessions to give feedback. You can always email, you know, particularly a committee member, if you have something you need to share. You can also, even better, tell Krishna, tell her directly, share what you need to share. So that's good. So I don't know, there's no RSVP. I don't know how many folks are going to show up, but I'm going to be here in the sunroom for an hour. And I'll also be on Zoom if people want to come in on Zoom instead. And then the last thing we talked about was board, just all the comings and goings of the board membership. So just planning for people's terms being up. We look through everyone's terms. And then on the recruitment side, Sarah raised her hand this evening. She's a former Oakland school leader herself. And I believe she lives in the neighborhood. And she's interested in learning more about board service. So the committee will kind of be reviewing her resume in October. And it's possible that at the October board meeting, the committee could be bringing you all a recommendation for approving Sarah or someone else even to have a new 2-year term. So if you have any questions about that, let me know. In the meantime, in terms of the process of that, we just share a lot of information. So we share all these key documents so people can read our charter, our bylaws, our board book, our school calendar, the website. We tell people, come to the meetings. They're all public. If you really want to learn about us, like, you can listen to the old audio recordings. You can read the old minutes. So there's just lots of ways for people, parents who are interested in being board members or community members, just to learn about what the work has looked like in the past. And then when people say, yeah, I think I'm willing to do this, then we also make sure that they for sure get a one-on-one with Krishna to kind of connect and let Krishna have a chance to ask questions, let them ask questions of Krishna as well. So then at the executive committee, like if questions come up, we can get responses from a candidate, that kind of thing. So that's nice to know. We'll have board members. It'll happen. And I think that is, and I guess one more announcement is that when you cycle off a board, you're supposed to refile your form 700. So everyone, Lauren should do it, Olivia, Haysen, everyone should refile their form 700, wet signature. And you can probably just drop it in the lockbox out front of school. Is that fair, Krishna? With like a note that just says, give to Miss Krishna. Or give to Miss Rosie. Give to Miss Rosie. There you go. Form 700, people. That's the committee report. Any questions from the board or public comment?
In the vein of collecting voluntary vaccine information from the older students, what is the legal, I guess, and the administration position around communication on teacher vaccination? I know that they have to either be vaccinated or be tested weekly, but is communicating our vaccination rate something that
it's legal? It is legal for the school to share a percentage of its employees that are fully vaccinated.
And I'll be able to do that next month. People have a few more days to provide me formal confirmation.
Thank you.
Yeah, and when it came to students, well, you probably got it, right? You say, right?
Yeah.
So it was very, it was not asking for documentation, and it gave people a chance to decline to state and all that stuff because it's not a requirement. We're just trying to understand if people what people are willing to share at this point.
And what will that information be shared out to the community, or will it be used internally?
I don't. The committee, I think, at first was just thinking about understanding a little bit, just navigating the politics of what a mandate might mean for us. Like, if you know, for example, if we're already at a super high rate, then maybe there's some work that we could just plan out some of the steps. So maybe the next step is saying, okay, who's willing to like submit verification, you know, of it, and then we could do, you know, who's willing to get on the phone and have like a counseling phone call about getting vaccinated, you know, or who wants more information to like learn about vaccination or how to get a vaccine. So I think that's kind of it was just a starting point. I don't know how much we'll be able to, what the plan is to kind of share back out the results. I don't know how useful it'll be, because it's not verified.
Right. Thank you.
Anyone else? Any other stuff on that? Otherwise, we'll move on to, I'll just stick with it on 6B, board committee officers and members. So starting, you're all still board members, by the way, through the end of the month. We try and make these transitions. This is your last board meeting, unless Davis has to call a special meeting between now and then, which I don't think he's going to do. So starting October 1st, then, since we don't have new FAC reps at this time, and we won't, I don't think, by October 1st. So there will be a board of 5. So quorum will be 3. And then we've got the finance committee is intact and the exec committee is intact. But I want to make a nomination that Jan become the chair of the academic committee.
I second that.
And Jan, will you accept that nomination?
I accept.
Woohoo! Thank you, Jan. Thank you. Okay.
Hold on for a second, because I am not as fast as you are on recording these votes. All right.
You're gonna take the note of the vote?
I am typing, yes.
Great. So go ahead and call the roll then. Or unless there's any is there any comment or questions about the before we take a vote on this? Okay. Are you ready to call the roll, Mr. Chair?
I am. All right. This is Davis and I am voting aye. Greg?
Aye.
Jan?
Abstain.
Lauren?
Aye.
Stacy?
Aye.
All right. And the motion passes.
Congratulations. Awesome. So then, Jan, you mentioned you needed another member.
Yes.
All right.
I don't know if anyone wants to make a nomination.
I would like to make a nomination to add Greg to academic committee.
Does anyone want to second Davis's nomination?
I'll second.
Is there any discussion? I'll accept the nomination. Is there any discussion or comment about this? Or questions?
All right. If there is no discussion, I will take the vote. This is Davis and I vote aye. Greg?
I guess I'll abstain.
Jan?
Aye.
Lauren?
Aye.
Stacy?
Aye.
All right. And the motion passes. Congratulations, Greg.
Welcome, Greg.
It's the one committee I've always wanted to be on and have never gotten to be on. I'm serious.
Really?
Yeah. I'm stoked. Okay. Do we need, so that means the exec committee, Jan, is the two of us. So we both need to show up.
Academic committee. Yes.
Excuse me. The academic committee. Yes. Yes. Awesome. Anyone, are there any other changes to officers or members of committees that we need to make for tonight?
Do we need to officially remove people from committees or no?
No, if they resign from the board, they resign from the committee. Right, we're good on that. We still have a like a vice chair stuff?
We do not have a vice chair.
We don't, huh?
No, sir.
Got to pull up. Well, then we should quickly figure out I'm just pulling up the board officers and committee spreadsheet. We should quickly figure out if we need a vice chair. Because I know who I would nominate.
Can't nominate me.
No, I can't nominate you. I know I would nominate somebody, but I don't know if she'd accept. Well, I'll make it, and then you can decline the nomination if you don't want it, if it gets a second. I nominate Jan to be vice chair.
I don't know if I can handle all this leadership responsibility.
Vice chair is a good one, though, because he only has to step in now and then. It's really just to facilitate that rare meeting that the chair can't make.
Yes, exactly.
Sure, I accept.
Sweet! Jan, in all honesty, I wasn't sure if you would accept. It's all good. Is there a second? Will someone second my nomination?
I am absolutely going to second that. All right.
And I'm going to say thanks, Jan, for accepting that. I appreciate you.
All right. Is there any further discussion that needs to be had? All right. If not, I will take the vote on this nomination. I vote aye. Greg?
Aye.
Jan?
Abstain.
Lauren?
Aye.
Stacy?
Aye.
All right. And the motion passes.
Congratulations. All right. So now we've got still all of our board roles. We've got all of our committees staffed with quorum and all that sort of stuff. And we're going to have new board members, and we can make adjustments again as soon as we need to. So if anyone needs to make another change, we can do it. That's why we always agendize this, so we have that ability to be nimble. Okay, that's all I have on this item.
Right. With that, we will move on to other business. Greg, do you want to give the...
I do. I have quite a few of these updates, but I can do them briefly, each one. I know, I can do them briefly. But if you could take the notes, Davis, or just start. So the main Oakland, California updates. So Jan went over, there's a growth model that is being worked on. So that's a big one from California. California passed some language around cleaning up some of the independent study processes, which we're still like learning about. And they also cleaned up some of the Brown Act rules. But we're going to keep looking at it, but I think the bottom line is, when it comes to the Brown Act and our open meeting laws, I think for us currently, for starting in October, we're in the safest ground operating basically how we used to operate pre-pandemic. Plus, we can keep these Zoom links open. So you know, public, if you still want to just only participate on Zoom, like that will still continue to be an option. But like, we're here trying out the in-person meetings, and we're probably going to do more in-person meetings. And if members of the board need to meet only virtually, there are ways we can make that happen as well. There were always ways for that to happen even before the pandemic. On the Oakland side, so Oakland just last night passed their student vaccine mandate. So they're now maybe just a couple of school districts that have done that in the state of California. It obviously hasn't like gone into effect immediately. Like, kids are still allowed to go to school right now, but it's coming. The other thing I wanted to be sure that I shared with you all, just as the context of what Oakland's is in the midst of again, is I put it in the documents of the other file section of this meeting. It's a letter from Alameda County to the board president of OUSD. I can actually, I'll just real briefly just share it because it had, yeah, it's about their budget and how their budget is conditionally approved by Alameda County. Our budget also goes to Alameda County for approval. And it shows for without one-time funding, right? So the county is basically saying structurally, how are you doing OUSD financially? Because there's a lot of one-time dollars right now because of COVID and things like that. And so they're saying, yeah, this year you're looking like you're going to have an EFB, an ending fund balance of $80 million, 13.3%. That looks great. But they're projecting the following year a deficit of nearly $7.5 million. And then this is the biggest number I've ever seen in this. It's over $93 million. This is OUSD. And this is, again, without one-time funding. And to be clear, there is one-time funding. So these numbers aren't going to be this dramatic, but it just gives you a sense of the work ahead for our local district. And so just wanted to make sure that we had that context as a board. And then I guess that'll be it for my Oakland and California updates. Yeah. But I don't know if other people have things that they've been reading about or sharing about. Or if there's any public comment or questions about what I offered.
I have a
93 million is a lot of money. Sorry, go ahead, Lauren.
I have a question that is not directly pertaining to this, but I hope is enough on topic, but as far as attendance impacting funding, what is going on this year in terms of when and how attendance is?
It's basically regular rules. So in terms of what we were just talking about for like OUSD and their forecast, like their enrollment and attendance is like include those four. The county's forecasts of OUSD is included in that chart that I just shared. And then same with us in our forecasts and our financial documents, our ADA, our enrollment, our attendance rate. Also, it's very traditional, even like in independent study, similarly, the way we're doing independent study, we're only offering it for 14 days. And so it's all basically the same rules as it's been in the past.
Okay.
It's not like last year, which was all this hold harmless. Yeah.
Right. So, in terms of the 14 days, is that per student, per academic year? So if a class were to go into quarantine more than once?
So, you would still, the guidance is you're going to, I mean, and what I think Krishna and her team are doing is just if you do whatever you have to do first and foremost for the health and wellness, right? So you do what you have to do that way. And then you, from there, you provide as much learning as you can, as best as you can, like, in that scenario, it's like through the Learning Everywhere program. And then the last thing we're going to be thinking about is like the financial implications. And that's where there are some processes beyond independent study where you can work with your authorizer to try and say, hey, this was could we have a waiver here? Could we count some percentage of these? But none of that is guaranteed. And we're not counting on any of that. And it definitely requires the county's approval. EdTech is a guide for the finance team and the administration on like how to navigate that and when it's worth it. Like if it's like one class for a couple of days, like it may not be worth the trouble of bothering your authorizer around. So yeah.
Okay. Thank you. And do we know yet how I'm sorry if I missed it, but I don't think I saw attendance numbers in your.
Right. That's what Jan asked about too. And it sounds like they're still documenting the independent study processes to add into the attendance. So it's just not ready yet but we'll have them by next month.
Okay.
And you can still come as a member of the public and find all about it.
I can't wait.
Any other questions or public comment on 7A? All right. Then with that, is there a motion to approve last month's meeting minutes? I'm back on minutes, David. Okay.
I will make a motion to approve those minutes from August
26th.
I'll second.
Great. Any question or discussion about that? Or questions about the minutes? All right, then, Davis.
Aye.
Greg, I vote yes. Jan?
Aye.
Lauren?
Aye.
And Stacy?
Aye.
Awesome.
Passes. All right, and with that, we'll move on to 7C. Which is the general consent report. Does anyone have any questions about the general consent? All right, if not, I would like to make a motion to pass the general consent report. Could I have a second?
I second.
Jan seconds.
Davis, how do you vote? As I vote yes. Jan?
Aye.
Lauren?
Aye.
And Stacy?
Aye.
Thank you very much. Is there any items that we need to discuss at future meetings? If there is not, then we will move into closed session. Greg, would you like to?
I'll pause the recording in a moment, but I did learn that before we go into closed session, we should take public comment on we should offer public comment. So if there's any public comment on our two closed session items tonight, which are the head of school performance evaluation, and then the other one is the lease negotiations. So if anyone has public comment on those, you don't know the details of that, but you're allowed to make comment based on what is printed on the agenda. And then, okay, so if there's none, and then Davis, you are supposed to orally say the exact items that we're going into closed session on.
Okay, so we are moving into closed session. We are discussing the public employee performance evaluation for head of school. And we are also discussing the conference with real property negotiations. Do I have to list everything?
No, I think that's fine.
Okay, all right.
Thank you. All right, so with that, I'm going to pause the recording.
All right. All right, it is 8:31 p.m. We are returning to open session. We took no action during closed session. And with that, we will adjourn this meeting. Thank you, everyone.
Good night. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Lauren.
Thanks, Lauren. Last closed session.